what's gone. They say life carries on. They say life carries on.
Casey Roush, and you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Isla Earth. You probably won't find Jimmy Nardello's sweet Italian frying peppers or Amish deer tongue lettuce at your local supermarket. But a growing community of gardeners is reviving these and other heirloom plants. Those colorful and flavorful varieties our great-great-grandparents grew. Before the industrial agricultural boom, farmers grew many more varieties of fruits and vegetables than are in our grocery stores today. That all changed when farmers looked for higher yield in more shippable crops, ones with longer shelf lives and consistent shape and size for easy packaging. But as anyone who's bitten into a juicy homegrown tomato knows, there's a trade-off. Crops tailored for the mass market are nowhere near as delicious as some backyard varieties. But growing heirloom plants is about more than harvesting tastier tomatoes. Heirlooms tend to be more nutritious. It's also about preserving a snippet of our agricultural history and maintaining the biodiversity of our food supply. Networks of people around the country and around the world are sharing heirloom seeds with one another in an effort to sustain the genetic and cultural diversity of our food. Now that's something worth biting into. Learn more at islaearth.org. Isla Earth is produced by the Catalina Island Conservancy with support from its Fund for a Sustainable Planet, because Earth is an island.
It is 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Thank you.
at noon. Tune a fishy boom, decibel peaks be my ritual. One condition, though, we're laying on like a municipal. Lyrics habitual, we're pumping Buddha, get your boo, and I'ma do the opposite of peace and go to war. So go prepare your balls for the floor show. Every more so, I'm your corporal, rather resourceful. Ripping rappers from their dome piece to their torso. No remorse for imitators, my groovy innovators, paying homage as well as returning favors. Learning flavors from the path pavers. Now Ozo Motley be making new hits from past day to take it. It's a Super Bowl Sunday. Hey. It's a Super Bowl Sunday. Hey. Yeah, I'm Charlie Tuna Fish. Ain't no fucking twist in my posture. Picking shots cause a brother gotcha. My proper shrimp and lobster on my dock like a mobster, giving shouts to states to sustain my stature. Altered chemically, ain't no gimmick behind the way that I'm designing my rhyme line for line. You'll find in your neighborhood there's a flavor flood, whether you're a ghetto star or if your name is Mud. I speak the truth rather courageously, and I act rather contagiously when the stage is free. The rage in me's contained, now they got me. Charlie Tuna Fish and Ozo Motley. Hey.
Thank you. And I gladly trade his last Support for KKFI provided by Californo's in Westport, featuring Valentine's Day weekend at Californo's, with live performances by the Fine Arts Chorale, Kansas City's Vine Street Rumble Jazz Orchestra, as well as Late Night Motown Dance Party, with the collective featuring Brother John Anderson. Details online at californos.com.
Hey, do you want to get rid of your unused car, motorcycle, or boat, and help KKFI at the same time? The proceeds from the sale of your vehicle will benefit KKFI, and the law allows a tax deduction equal to the gross proceeds from the sale of the donated vehicle. For more information, call the toll-free number at 1-866-628-2277.
Donate stuff to community radio and get that wonderful feeling you get by knowing that you've helped out. You've done something. You've given a damn and potentially a junk car or a boat or a motorcycle, a truck, I don't know, a steam shovel. Whatever you may have, give it because it can help. It's 12:30 in the morning. I'm Benjamin. This is the Paragon radio program here with you on a Sunday night, Monday morning. I guess it is Monday now. And thank God that football season is finally over. Oh, such a relief. But I will say that it was a bit of a disappointment because the Super Bowl was yesterday. They said it was in New York, but it was actually in New Jersey, which doesn't really mean anything to me. But there were supposed to be, they said for one, the Super Bowl was supposed to have a football game, and there was also potentially supposed to be a terror attack. I mean, there were several YouTube videos that were laying it out using Batman, the MetLife blimp, and I believe the Jews, and rolling those three things together. And did you also know that Rutherford, which is East Rutherford, is where the Super Bowl stadium is, Rutherford is actually a unit of measurement for the decay of radioactive material. Yeah, so, I mean, it was just like there was all this synergy going on. You figure there's going to be a terror attack. And you were told that there was going to be a football game. And neither one of those things happened. What a disappointment. I mean, really. I was at a Super Bowl party. Oh. Ate some vegan food at a Super Bowl party. I feel like I need to vomit. I feel like I could really throw up on myself here. But it doesn't matter now because football season is over and we can get down to more important things like college basketball season or professional basketball season. Or is it, I guess they don't do NASCAR races this time of year. Mm-mm. But for everyone out there that has overly identified themselves with their professional football team, everyone's at home licking their wounds, unless I guess you're from Seattle. Which begs the question, does that mean Seattle has better weed, or does Denver have better weed? It all depends on your angle. All depends on your angle, because you could argue that, oh, Seattle has better weed because they won the game. But then if you think about it, it would seem as though because Denver didn't really show up to play a game, they kind of have the telltale signs of having the better weed because they were just lost on the field. Looked like the only guy that didn't smoke any was Peyton Manning. And by the second half, it looked like he had actually smoked some. Which, you know, with the nature of, I mean, let's face it here. Football players love to smoke weed. They all must do it, right? You got to figure the vast majority of them. So who would not want to be a football player for the Broncos or the Seahawks? It would seem like the entire, all the talent in the football, in the National Football League is going to flock to those cities because it is legal to smoke weed. Dwayne Bowe, you know, who's a Kansas City Chief, he had an issue. I don't know if he was coming to or from the Corner Cafe, but he got pulled over in Riverside, you know, potentially for driving while black, potentially for driving well, black and a really nice car with loud music and Cheech and Chong smoke coming out of the windows. I don't know. I mean, of course, his lawyer said he was, you know, 100% innocent. That it was the blunt that was on fire inside of that vehicle was actually in the car when it was purchased. But Dwayne Bowe wouldn't have those problems if he had been a Bronco or a Seahawk. So it just kind of a little side note. It'd be really hard. It'd be really easy, I think, for Denver and Seattle to recruit new teammates. I think that'd be very easy. But we're not here to talk about football season because football season's over. Does that mean that we're coming up on damn 7 years? 7 years since Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. Oh, my God, is it 8 years? It's a lot of years. No, it's 9 years. God damn, it's 9 years. 2005. 9 years since the good doctor shot himself in the face on top of a mountain in Colorado because football season. 9 years. God, I'm going to have to spend some time thinking about the severity of that number. In a few short moments, I'm going to have to do that. So we learned some things today. Philip Seymour Hoffman, dead. I'm not sure what movie he was in that I liked the most. I'm not sure. I can't think of...
Charlie Wilson's War.
Was that your favorite Seymour Hoffman movie?
Well, no, that was his favorite. That was his best role.
Yeah, maybe so. I was looking at his filmography. I never saw Capote. I never saw it.
A lot of local references.
Understand that he won an Oscar for that. I didn't see it, though. But he's dead. They said they found him with a needle in his arm. And a bunch of envelopes with heroin in them. Do you know heroin is all over the news these days? Getting cut with painkillers that are killing people, people overdosing. And the amazing thing is, the only reason that heroin's popular again is because people who get addicted to OxyContin and oxycodone and these synthetic painkillers, they get to the point where they can't afford to buy them anymore. And heroin is a economical alternative. That's rough. That's rough, folks. Really rough. And they said that Seymour Hoffman had 10 envelopes of heroin with him. Some of the heroin was stamped with an ace of hearts. Some of it was stamped with an ace of spades. So I don't know if that's Lemmy's official brand of heroin or what that is. But he was found with a needle in his arm. And then it comes out that, yes, Woody Allen still is a pervert. And if you really like him as an artist and you like his movies, that means you condone pedophilia. I guess that's what that means. I mean, that story of him, you know, Mia Farrow, the actress that he had the long-term relationship with. I mean, I'm not real clear on all this stuff. This goes back, this is, you know, this story is like 20 years old, but then his ex-adopted daughter had an open letter to the New Yorker, or one of the bloggers for the New Yorker, saying that she was raped by Woody Allen starting when she was 7 years old. And it's perverted. I mean, it's amazing. It just in one day, you get a glimpse into Hollywood. Hard drugs and pedophilia. Is that the story of Tinseltown? And it would seem to be. And then you look at a kid like, you know, like the Beeb. He's getting deported. And the way that people get exploited, quite perverse, really disgusting. And the way people exploit themselves, they were saying, I don't know if it's Dylan or Dylan Farrow, the ex-adopted daughter of Woody Allen, was saying that while he would rape her, that he would promise to put her in his movies. This is a 7-year-old. That's what she said. Now, of course, Woody Allen is denying this completely. But another famous director, Roman Polanski, famously cannot come back to America because of charges against him and hides out in Switzerland with somebody's money because of a sexual relationship he had with a minor who I believe was like 13 or 14, not the depths of just, I don't know what the term would be there for raping a 7-year-old girl. I mean, there's a lot of terms that can come to mind, but we are on the radio here. And you can rest assured knowing that that type of behavior used to be much more accepted than it is now. And maybe, just maybe, if we all work really hard together, in the future, the really near future, we can stop raping the children. I mean, there's lots of stuff we got to stop raping here, folks. I mean, let's be honest here. It's kind of the Western way. It's kind of what we do. You know, between this country and the British, we got really good at it. Raping and pillaging, the whole murder, rape, and greed thing. And at some point, we really got to put a stop to it. Now, granted, pedophilia is not nearly as accepted as it once was. You don't even have to go that far back in history to get to a point where aristocracy, people with money, power, privilege, title, etc., would routinely have sex with children as a extension of power.
Led Zeppelin.
Well, that's not quite what I was. I would go a little farther back than that. A couple more generations farther back than that. I mean, you know, Howlin' Wolf had said, love to have a little girl too. That's not really what I'm talking about. Not really what I'm talking about.
But some people will tell you that hard drugs and pedophilia is what making it in this country is all about.
Who would tell you that? Jordan Belfort?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the kind of person that would tell you that. No, I mean, together, just maybe we can, in the very near future, stop the raping of the children. But then again, you look at all the things that get raped out there. A lot of rape going on. You know, it's a common thing. And if it's not people getting raped, it's Japanese fishermen, sodomizing dolphins. Jesus Christ. I mean, how perverted is that? And I'm not, I usually don't advocate too much for animals. Man, when a bunch of Japanese fishermen descend on a school of dolphins, I don't even know what a plural version of a bunch of dolphins would be, with machetes and sharp knives to, you know, turn that out on a sushi table or whatever they do with, it's a dolphin.
I think they call that a smack of dolphins.
A smack of dolphins. Mm. Yeah, it's a little heavy, is all it is. And then you think about the real rape and the real pillage, where we're not even talking about human beings or animals, but the goddamn Alberta tar sands. Seriously, if you have not, you need to get on YouTube or Google Video or wherever and type in the Alberta tar sands, Alberta, Canada, Alberta tar sands, and get an aerial shot of what they have done to the arboreal forest in the Canadian winterland for the purposes of extracting oil. Have you seen an aerial shot? Like something shot from a helicopter of the vastness of that destruction? Oh, it's immense.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, what they've done to the forest up there? Oh my God. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of square miles, if not thousands of square miles, just destroyed. And it looks, I believe Neil Young put it best when he said, it looks worse than Hiroshima. And he was asked to take that comment back by the Japanese Canadian community, or so. I don't know who he was asked to take that back by, but he stood by it. But no, F that. Because, you know, Neil Young can get indignant and say that he is better than that, and his countrymen are better than that, because he's not an American. He's a Canadian. He can get indignant about environmental and ethical and moral issues because he's Canadian. He can fall back and say, I'm a Canadian, goddammit. I thought we were better than that. Hard for us in America to do that. We'd have to get rid of a couple of states for us to be able to honestly say that.
Did they clear cut it, or is it from spillage, or is it contamination?
So they have to take the tar sands. There is, you know, underneath this forest, there is soil that is leached with oil, and they have to destroy the forest to get it. It's not like oil they can just pump out of the ground. They have to process it, and they use immense amounts of water, just like they do with hydraulic fracking. They use a bunch of water. They waste untold amounts of water. I mean, we're talking hundreds and, you know, millions of gallons of water per well. It's amazing.
Well, it's not all water. It's half chemicals.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, the tar sands. If you have not seen that. And that's what that whole Keystone XL pipeline. That's, you know, that is going to get built at some point. I mean, you can find pictures of the pipe ready to go down in North Dakota. I mean, it's gotten so perverse that, you know, America is now an oil exporting country again for the first time since the 70s. We are a net oil exporter. And where we are finding this boom is in places like North Dakota.
You know, I have a buddy that works in North Dakota. He just got a job up there. He says there's a lot of work. A
lot of work in North Dakota. That's absolutely right. A lot of people going up there. So in the middle of the wilderness in North Dakota, there's all these oil fields, the Bakken oil field. And there is no pipelines to pull this stuff to market. So they're putting it on trains. That's how John D. Rockefeller started out, moving his oil on trains. And that's how old that technology is. That's 150-year-old technology that we're again doing. And there was a town in Canada that one of these trains that was full of oil that didn't even have a living person on there. It was a ghost train. You know, one of these trains that is just, you know, running out there, you know, automatic for the people. That crashed and caused a scene of, I mean, it was like karaoke night at the local bar or something like that.
Did you hear the 911 calls?
I didn't.
They played some of them.
I bet they were intense. I mean, you see a tidal wave of petroleum fire coming your way while you're trying to smoke a cigarette in between listening to, you know, the Dixie Chicks and David Allan Coe at karaoke night. It's probably going to freak you out and leave a lasting impression upon you. Yeah, but this is all to, you know, to make America energy independent. This is genius, isn't it? And everyone's so concerned about the Keystone XL pipeline. What about the damn Keystone pipeline? Keystone pipeline runs from essentially across the border in Canada to a small town in Illinois, and it runs through Missouri. You know, the Keystone pipeline already runs through Missouri, and this Keystone XL pipeline is just another additional pipeline to handle the crude that's coming down.
That's the one that's going through Kansas.
Yes. Yes, that would be the one that would go through Kansas, that will be going through Kansas. And I guess, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's just like those folks in Arkansas found out when, you know, it was literally like the pilot episode for the Beverly Hillbillies, where Texas Tea literally starts just popping out of the ground. But it wasn't because, you know, old Jed was going to become a millionaire and there was a bunch of oil underneath his land. It's no, because there were buried pipelines that went through people's backyards that once they ruptured, literally the ground just started, spitting oil out, sweating oil out. People had no idea what it was from. They had no idea what was going on because they had no idea there was a buried pipeline running through their town carrying oil to the Gulf or wherever. You know, because this stuff gets built, it's got a lifespan on it, and then, of course, what happens in the end? You know, It lives longer than its lifespan. It continues to work. It deteriorates, and then it breaks. And it doesn't get fixed until it's broken. I mean, look at Kansas City. And they said when the sewers were built, they were 70-year sewers. The sewers were built starting in the 1880s. 70-year sewers starting build date in the 1880s. And now here it is, 2014. The sewers are completely falling apart. And the people of Kansas City are paying, you know, a ridiculous amount to have those fixed because nobody had the foresight to take care of the problem beforehand. Now, that's just dealing with, you know, people's waste, people's toilet water. Now we're talking about, you know, the 800,000 barrels per day that would come down through the Keystone Pipeline and get filtered around to various ports for export and refining, etc.
On a sort of related note, this older fellow that's a family friend of ours back in Pennsylvania, he had a garage for like 20 years that he worked on cars, and he's an old man now and he's selling it. Well, before, back in the day, it was a Phillips 66 station, and they buried some tank way down deep underneath this thing that was one of those, I don't know what it was made out of, but it was not up to par, and it leaked through, and it did a bunch of damage to a lake nearby. Well, this old man, friend of our family's, is trying to sell this piece of property with the garage on it, and the EPA is all over him saying that he didn't even know this tank was down there, that he has to go down there and pay to get it all cleaned up and taken care of. Well, his lawyers got on it, and they tried to put it on this old, they found some old paperwork that it was Phillips 66 who buried this thing. But their lawyers produced something in court saying that they knew it was a problem and they sold the problem, basically, some cleanup company that went out of business in like 1968. So there's somehow nobody responsible. So it all comes back to him. So this old man, he's like an 81-year-old man. He can't sell this piece of property until he pays. And I think it's like $45,000 to get this thing cleaned up.
Right.
So, and there's probably stories like that all over the place.
All over the place. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's one of those things, you know. Let the oil and natural gas companies figure it out. They're going to keep everything safe for you. And all that hydraulic fracking, you know, that's not destroying the groundwater. Those are just isolated incidents. You know, people lighting their tap water on fire. That is just an isolated incident. But if you think hydraulic fracking is bad, I saw this story and I thought it to be quite funny. That back in the 60s, the government experimented with nuclear fracking. You want to talk about getting fracked up? I mean, totally fracked up. You go back to 1967. In December, scientists from the Atomic Energy Commission and officials from the U.S. Bureau of Mines and El Paso Natural Gas Company gathered at a gas well in northern New Mexico. They lowered a 29-kiloton nuclear device more than 4,000 feet down a shaft and set it off. And you know what? It worked. The 4,042-foot-deep detonation created a molten glass-lined cavern about 160 feet in diameter and 330 feet tall. It collapsed within seconds. Subsequent measurements indicated fractures extended more than 200 feet in all directions and significantly increased natural gas production. And the best part is the natural gas was glowing, even if it wasn't lit.
And where was this at?
In New Mexico.
Of course.
I mean, you know, come on, New Mexico. It's a beautiful place, but probably one of the more radioactive places on the planet. I mean, if New Mexico were to secede from the United States and maintain its nuclear stockpiles, it would be the third largest nuclear power on the planet, right after the United States and Russia. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Just in little old New Mexico, you know, the land of crystal and crystal meth.
Maybe that's why the...
half the state is really into crystals. The other half is really into crystals.
And don't forget Roswell.
Ah, yeah, the aliens. And not those aliens from Mexico. Different aliens.
Probably why they're... did you see that story this week about the apparent UFO cover-up. It's a new story, but it's an old story. The astronauts see weird stuff.
Sure.
And they're told not to talk about it.
I'm sure in outer space you see all kinds of weird stuff. That would make sense to me. The Atomic Energy Commission tried twice more. In 1969, they set off a 43-kiloton nuclear bomb in an 8,500-foot deep well near Rulison, Colorado. And in 73, they set off three 33-kiloton bombs in a single well near Rifle, Colorado. In all three tests, they collaborated with the local gas utilities. These tests were part of the Plowshare program, a government initiative to find peaceful uses for nuclear explosions. Adams for Peace. You got to love that. A government initiative to find peaceful uses for nuclear explosions. You know? And they could replace, I don't know, 4th of July fireworks extravaganzas. I mean, how much cooler would it be just to have a, you know,
a mushroom cloud in every city?
Yeah, exactly. Boom! That'd be the big one. You know what I'm saying? Folks would love that. They would absolutely love that. Although the technology that was demonstrated was technically feasible, it could not be proved that the national energy needs justified the elaborate procedures that would be required. Concerns about the potential of the tritium contamination of the gas that would result from nuclear explosive stimulation were raised by Coloradans and Western Alliance agencies. These concerns and the lack of public support for the program made it unlikely that Congress would ever approve a commercial joint venture with the government and industry of natural gas. And by 1974, approximately $82 million had been invested in the new nuclear gas stimulation technology program. It was estimated that even after 25 years of gas production, all of the natural gas deemed recoverable, that only 15 to 40% of the investment could be recovered. At the same time, alternative non-nuclear technologies were being developed, such as hydrofracturing. Consequently, under the pressure of economic and environmental concerns, the Plowshare program was discontinued at the end of fiscal year 1975. But to pick that up where, I don't know, fracking left off, they're now talking about the huge holes that are made by hydraulic fracturing as being a perfect place to insert nuclear waste. And apparently it's totally safe. It's totally safe to do that. But that's what the Nuclear Waste Disposal, you know, Council said. Hell yeah, you can do that. Just squirt it down those holes. It's not like it's going to come back out, right?
Maybe we'll have less sinkholes.
Just fill them all up with nuclear waste. It'll save Florida. It's every other week you hear about a guy who's sitting there watching The Price is Right, and then all of a sudden a sinkhole swallows him up in his bed.
Some people say that there's always been sinkholes, but you just hear about them now more because of Twitter.
Yeah, that might be true. People tweeting about their sinkholes might have a point to that. Yeah, well, I mean, every other week you hear about some guy getting swallowed up in a sinkhole in Florida. And there's sinkholes in Missouri now, too. They're saying that in Kansas and Oklahoma, because of fracturing, there's all these miniature earthquakes that are taking place. I mean, expand that thought. Saudi Arabia, which to me seems like one big bowl of sand with oil underneath it. They've pumped how many hundreds of billions of barrels of oil out of that peninsula over the last 60, 70 years? How is that place not a big pile of quicksand?
Don't you remember a couple years ago, it was during an Oklahoma basketball game in Stillwater, but there was an earthquake there. It's like 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, but that big one that they said they felt the aftershocks here in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. You think that was, you know, that was fracturing?
You know, I don't know a lot about that hydraulic fracturing thing. I've always thought that when you take a whole bunch of oil out, I mean, I know the oil was put there by God for our cars, but isn't it also supposed to lubricate the plates?
Lubrication.
I always thought without the lube, you know, it would be just a
lot of friction. You get blisters. Rock. Yeah, rock on rock. That's right. And blisters is no fun. No, that would make a lot of sense that the oil was actually there for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like one of those things.
Yeah. So when the plates do move, they slide together. Because this is an earthquake when they're not lubed, and it's just like... I just made that up in my head. I'm no scientist, but it just seems
you are definitely... I'll concede to that. You are no scientist, sir. And you did just make that up in your head. But to somebody, that may have made sense. Especially if they were watching the webcam and saw what your hands did. You know, that would have really, really, for the visual people out there, would have helped them understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I mean, that might be part of it. I mean, but what the hell, man? I mean, what do we care at this point? Right? I mean, between the tar sands and the hydraulic fracturing and the fact that more oil is being carried on rail every single day and that trains are... I mean, essentially large Molotov cocktails rolling down the tracks to a town near you. I mean, come on. I mean, just the level of carbon dioxide that's going to be squirted into the atmosphere from the Alberta tar sands is going to dwarf just about everything else anyone ever does, ever, at any time. And if you haven't yet, you really should go check that out and see how immense and scary that is. I mean, it really, truly is scary. All right, it's about 1 o'clock right here on Community Radio.